The Big Story is brought to you by Scotia iTrade. There's a trader in all of us. With a few notable exceptions, we don't typically associate Canada with leading the drive to explore the final frontier. Sure, we've sent astronauts to space, and we've definitely done our bit with robotics.
One of the hardest working space robots is the Canadarm2 on the International Space Station.
And we have, of course, contributed to the illustrious canon of literal space rock.
This is ground control to Major Tom. You've really made the grade.
But in recent years, those have been the extent of the headlines, even though they really shouldn't be. For instance, did you know that last week, a Canadian-made super telescope found what's called a repeating fast radio burst? It's only the second of its kind that's ever been detected. We don't even know yet what this is or what it means, but it's far enough away that it offers us a glimpse back in time and could eventually help unlock the secrets of the universe. And that's not the only thing that Canada's been doing out in space that you might not know about. If you look under the hood of some of the spacecraft out there exploring the furthest reaches of the solar system and beyond, you'd see a maple leaf. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Nicole Mortolero is a senior reporter of science at the CBC. Can you tell me, because I don't know and I don't think a lot of people know, what is CHIME?
So CHIME is a radio telescope in the Okanagan Valley in BC. So it's really weird. It doesn't look like a telescope at all.
Okay.
So if you took like a cylinder, cut it in half, and you picture those halves being laid side by side, so four of those, and there are no moving parts to that. And it scans the sky 24 hours, well, for certain things, for 24 hours a day. And it's just, it's this amazing achievement that's looking for pulsars, these cosmic lighthouses in space.
Right.
Send out signals, fast radio bursts. And again, these are bursts from way out and, you know, across the universe. And also other aspects or different aspects to this telescope. This telescope is really unique in that it searches a huge swath of the sky. And that's what makes it incredibly different from other telescopes, because the sky is really big.
Right.
And so you can only search a certain amount of sky, but this one is searching like the entire northern part of the sky all the time. And so they wanted to come up with something that would have those capabilities, and it was born.
And what have they found?
So CHIME was, you call it first light with telescopes when, you know, you first look out there, right?
Right.
First light was September 7th, 2017. And since then, they've only had it in the pre-commissioning phase. So not all the computers are going in. Maybe not all, and maybe it's not, it, well, it wasn't. It was searching like, it was at a quarter of its capacity, okay?
Okay.
So it's not searching the big swath of sky.
Right.
But what they found was 13 fast radio bursts. Now, you have to imagine that only 50 of these have been discovered. Okay.
Ever. Yeah.
And they found an additional 13. But on top of, like, in that 13 was a repeating one.
Right. And that's why we're talking today.
Yes. So we found Paul Schultz from McGill University found the first repeating fast radio burst. And that was only, I think that was 2015. I can't. It was weird because so these fast radio bursts, they last a millisecond. But in the repeating, it shifts through that radio frequency, but just ever so slightly. And it repeats. So it does it on different frequencies. And so CHIME found a second one. You know, yay Canadians, because this is we own the repeating fast radio burst. And that was something that was pretty amazing because only one other one has ever been discovered.
And we don't know why they're repeating and what it means.
We don't even understand fast radio bursts, let alone why they're repeating. So, yeah, we're hoping. So CHIME, look, you know, I was speaking to the scientists about this, and I asked them, how many of these FRBs, that's what we call fast radio bursts,
yep.
How many of these FRBs can you, you know, discover in a day? And they laughed and they said, we can't answer that because it is functioning at full capacity, and they already know how many they can find, but they were thinking like tens, like a day, like we could potentially hundreds a day.
Wow.
So they could maybe find more of these repeaters, and if they find these repeaters, maybe they'll figure out what they are.
So this is where it gets really, I don't want to science fiction it up.
I know.
But we don't know what causes these repeating bursts, and there are a million theories out there. What could it mean?
So Okay, I'm just going to do it. I'm going to touch on the fun one.
Yeah.
Aliens.
Right.
So, yeah, they think that maybe it could be an alien civilization sending a signal out. Sure, it's plausible, but it's unlikely. Mm-hmm. What astronomers think it is it's, so in order to have these things sending out signals, it has to be something highly magnetized.
Yeah.
So the pulsars are highly magnetized, the ones, the cosmic lighthouses. Another one is a magnetar, which is even more magnetic. Like it's ridiculous how powerful it is. It's something that they think that maybe something's happening to the magnetic field that's sending out these bursts every so often. And they're also thinking that perhaps maybe repeating fast radio bursts aren't unusual. Maybe we're just missing them. Like mm-hmm. maybe we saw one, and if we kept looking over time, we'd see another one.
Right.
But it's something that's highly magnetized. It's got to, I mean, they really think it could be like something similar to a pulsar.
I feel like we've seen a lot of these kind of discoveries in the last couple of years, from very strange bodies way out there in space to sending our spacecraft further than they've ever gone before. How much of the discussion that happens when people bring up aliens is because we're entering a sort of uncharted phase of space exploration? We just don't know what these things are.
No, exactly. We don't know what they are, but I think that's also our imagination. Aliens have been in our culture for how long, right?
Right.
Like, we love to think of the fantastical, and maybe also it's about not feeling alone in the universe. You know, personally, of course, I believe other civilizations exist out there. I don't think we're the only ones. But yeah, you're right. We are in uncharted territory.
Because we learned sort of, we had all sorts of questions and suspicions about our own solar system, right? Back when people wondered if there was life on Mars.
Yeah.
And then we learned sort of everything we could about the solar system we live in. And now we're getting further out there, and now we're encountering other things that we just don't understand.
Well, if you think about it, 100 years ago, we didn't know there were other galaxies out there.
Yeah.
Which is insane, right? Like you think, so you imagine how far we've come to not knowing there were other galaxies, to a spacecraft that's reaching Voyagers, the Voyager spacecraft, that are reaching the edge of our solar system, or passing the influence of our sun, to New Horizons passing by Ultima Thule, at the outer edge of our solar system, the Kuiper Belt, collection of these icy bodies. And also, we're starting to realize that life can exist in places that we didn't think they could exist. So now we're like, oh, wait.
Give me an example.
Well, so there are things called extremophiles. And, we always have water and oxygen and sunlight. This is what, you know, what is needed for life to exist. We're finding out that there are places in deep, deep, deep in the ocean with no light at all. There are life forms there, and complicated life forms, not just like, you know, amoebic kind of things.
Right.
And so now, because we realize that extremophiles exist, we're looking to the moons around Saturn and Jupiter, the two specifically that we're really hoping and we were thinking there might be life is Europa. And that's around Jupiter, mm-hmm. and Enceladus around Saturn. These are both very similar, not similar, but not identical, where they have an icy crust, and we think they have an ocean beneath it, and hydrothermal vents, so heat.
Yeah.
And we think, well, around here on Earth, that's where we find life. So could we possibly find life there?
How far are we away from even being able to investigate that?
I think we're still far off. I think so. We're already talking about spacecraft to go to Europa to fly through the plumes again and actually have instruments, because Cassini, the spacecraft that was in orbit around Saturn,
yes.
and discovered these plumes of water vapor coming out of Enceladus, which indicated there was some kind of pressure squeezing heating going on. They're actually going to send a spacecraft there. Well, we're hoping to send a spacecraft mm-hmm. there to fly through the plumes, because Cassini wasn't equipped to deal with that. It just found them and was like, oh, okay, well, we don't have the instrumentation necessarily
right.
to discover life. And, you know, dreamers like myself would love to see spacecraft sent to Europa to drill through the ice. But it's funny because at the same time, I kind of worry, because what if we send a spacecraft through that? We know that microbes, Earth microbes, can, you know, exist in, again, extreme conditions.
Yes.
What if we contaminate it? right? But I think there
it would be very fitting for us to kill the only other form of life we find.
Yeah, of course. Exactly, right? And then there's Mars. We have Mars.
Yep.
Wonderful Mars. And they think there's a subglacial ocean beneath the southern ice cap.
Well, that's why I wanted to have this discussion based off of the repeating fast radio burst, because it seems like the level of discovery and knowledge is on an exponential curve right now.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think when we look back at this, we're going to realize that we were really in the information age of discovery. An example, I remember I was in university. So yeah, I was in university. So 1994, front page, Toronto Star saying, we found an exoplanet, a planet orbiting another star. Since then, we have thousands. That's just since 1994. So for me, I think that it's probably from like the 90s that we just kind of burst onto the scene of exploration. I mean, there's so many spacecraft out there. So the spacecraft have to send signals back, right?
Yeah.
And it's something called the Deep Space Network. And there's a site you can go to show when they're uploading, downloading information. And they're constantly going, constantly for all the spacecraft we have out there.
Where can they go to see that?
So it's Deep Space Network, if they just Google that, and you can go to Track It Live, and you can see it. So you see when Voyager 2 is sending information back. It's just like a picture of a satellite,
right.
And it shows, you know, a satellite dish, and it shows the signal. But then if you click on the side, you can find out information about it, about the spacecraft, where it is. And then there's also NASA Solar System, which you can actually see where the spacecraft are, like New Horizons.
Up next.
You know, I think that as Canadians, we are kind of a little too humble sometimes.
Yeah.
We don't really, you know, we're looking at what the world is doing, especially the Americans, really. And, you know, we have the Canadian Space Agency.
There's a trader in all of us. Direct invest with Scotia iTrade. Become a new client and you could get up to $1,500 cash or 300 free trades when you open and fund a new account. Conditions apply. See ScotiaiTrade.com for details. It's funny because in one sense, we hear a lot about the fact that we're not pushing, and I say we as in humanity now, to send people places in space anymore, which seems like things are slowing down. Except on the other hand, technology like Chime goes to places where we would never have a hope of sending a person.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But I you know what? I don't think we are slowing down. I think we hit a wall.
Yeah.
Definitely we hit a wall. It was, you know, low Earth orbit, on the space station, on the shuttle. But I think that's picking up. And it's picking up with Elon Musk, you know, doing his stuff, thing.
He's going to go live on Mars, et cetera.
But NASA now has a mission or a goal to send people to Mars and to the moon. You know what we're doing? I bet you don't know this. This is really cool. We are building it. I'm going to use the old name because the new name is horrible, but a deep space gateway. And it will be in an orbit between Earth and the moon, closer to the moon.
Oh, wow.
And this is where we're jumping off point so that we can go to the moon or that we can go to Mars or that we can go to asteroids or whatever. This is being done now. We had the NASA administrator here in December, I think it was, or November, meeting with the Canadian Space Agency and saying they want us to be part of it. MDA, who is behind the Canada arm, they have a contract worth millions to build robotics for this deep space gateway.
This is really interesting because this is a perfect jumping off point to talk about Canada's role. Because I didn't know, and I think a lot of our listeners didn't know that Chime existed. Nevertheless, it was a Canadian venture. I think most of us associate Canada in space with Commander Hatfield and with the Canadarm. What else is Canada doing out there?
We are doing a lot. We have done a lot, too. That's the other thing. Right now, so we have, I don't know if people realize there's a spacecraft called OSIRIS-REx that just entered low orbit around a very tiny asteroid called Bennu. And it is going to map it, and that mapping tech's Canadian.
Hmm.
Curiosity that's on Mars, has been on Mars for quite some time,
yeah.
Canadian tech on that. You know, you point out the Canada, the Canadarm, And we're known for robotics, definitely.
Right. And it was well marketed and, and well, perfectly named.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, you could see Canada right on it every time you see it doing anything. But we are doing a lot. You know, I can't tell you how many times I do a story and I call somebody at the University of Sheffield or, you know, MIT. And I swear 8 out of 10 times they're Canadian. There are astronomers and scientists are everywhere, and we are doing amazing things. So not just the robotics, it's also the people who are doing this research, who are leading this research. Well, I went to a talk with Bill Nye, the science guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, he pulled out the $5 bill. And he's like, you guys, you know, you put space right on your $5 bill because it's got the Canada arm on it. And he said, you know what's amazing with you guys? You guys hitch a ride everywhere. He goes,
really?
Every time I turn around, part of your tech is on a spacecraft. And yeah, I mean, I think like CHIME is an amazing example. This telescope is huge, actually, and it's one of the biggest supercomputers in the country. And we're very humble about it.
Right. And if we hadn't have found this repeating FRB, most of us probably still wouldn't know that this existed and was about to get up to full power and map God knows what out there.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And, you know, I think that as Canadians, we're kind of a little too humble sometimes.
Yeah.
We don't really, you know, we're looking at what the world is doing, especially the Americans, really.
Well, especially when it comes to space, we sort of see it as the old-fashioned space race between America and Russia and China.
Yeah, and, you know, we have the Canadian Space Agency. A lot of people don't know that. I was talking to another, it was somebody from the CSA who said that one time somebody asked him, where do you work? And he said, oh, the Canadian Space Agency. And the person said, do you mean NASA? And he said, no, the Canadian Space Agency.
One in Canada,
wait,
too.
We have one? Yeah. People just don't realize that we are what we're doing.
How does that happen? Because you cover science for the CBC. So your job is to translate a lot of what's going on out there to the masses. Does Canada just do we do a bad advertising job, a bad marketing job? This is inspiring stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe that's part of the problem. You know, that's why I love my job too, right? I get to say, look what we're doing. This is amazing. And maybe we're just not as good. I mean, look, NASA is ridiculously, they're a marketing machine, man.
Yes.
Like, you remember the 7 minutes of terror video for Curiosity landing? That was really good.
Yeah.
And very emotional. So I don't know, maybe they just cornered the market on that and we need to maybe follow suit.
Well, it's harder to sell. I mean, it's just harder to sell technology and computing than it is to sell dude going somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. But still, I mean.
That's why Commander Hatfield is such a national icon, right? Because he's the Canadian, well, one of the Canadians who went somewhere.
Yeah. And right now we have David Saint-Jacques, who's on the International Space Station. You know, it's interesting, though, when I talk to Americans know about Canadian astronauts in particular, not just Hatfield.
Hmm.
A lot of people probably don't realize that David's up there and he's doing work in science. And it's a laboratory. He's got the best view ever, office view ever,
right.
But it's work. But yeah, maybe we just need to be pushing and doing a little more rah-rah.
What is next for CHIME in particular? What could it do in the future?
Well, so remember I was saying that it's a hydrogen mapping experiment. So it will be doing that. It'll be looking for these pulsars as well. But when it comes to the fast radio bursts, it could potentially detect hundreds a day.
What's the end game of that?
It's understanding the universe, right? It's also, it's deepening our knowledge. If it's a mystery that we need solved, you know, one of the scientists I spoke to said, maybe we don't understand pulsars, these ones that are happening nearby, as well as we thought we did. So maybe these fast radio bursts are related to the pulsars, and we need to understand it better. But it's about finding out, how did we come into existence? And I mean, from the Big Bang, from the very beginning, how did we get here, you know, after 13.8 billion years? Because those, like that fast radio burst, it's looking back in time. We're looking at something in space, it has to travel, you know, light speed. So we're looking at, let's say that it is 5 billion kilometers away.
Yeah.
That happened 5 billion years ago. So we're looking back in time, too. And that's what it's about, is understanding the birth and the beginnings of our universe.
Oh, just that.
Nothing important.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Nicole Mortellaro, senior science reporter at the CBC. That was The Big Story, brought to you by Scotia iTrade. You can visit scotiaitrade.com to start direct investing today. And check us out at thebigstorypodcast.ca. We want to hear from you. There's a contact form there. And of course, all our other episodes are up there too. And you can find us at The Big Story FPN on Twitter. And of course, Frequency Podcast Network is on Facebook and on Instagram, on that same little Twitter machine. Check us out wherever you get your podcasts, on Apple, on Google, on Stitcher, on Spotify. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. Thanks for listening. If you liked us, leave us a rating, leave us a review. We'll talk tomorrow.